League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Don't sweat the technique.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So you have J.J. Watt and the Houston Texans flirting again. Remember they did this last year where J.J. Watt was like in spikes working out. It's weird that he's working out in spikes in the weight room, by the way. Like, what a weird thing to do.
He
was in spikes. Yeah, he was in
spikes. I remember
spikes.
That we had a discussion or two about this.
No, he was in spikes.
But I never remembered him wearing spikes. That is very weird.
I'm pretty sure he was in white spikes. But yeah, I remember last year he was like working out with the Texans for a few days. There was a picture of him and like the strength coach in the gym. And then he said later, yeah, he's been working out. And he was saying on McAfee, like he was hitting with McAfee all year that, you know, hey, I'm not completely closing the book, like giving in the window, you know.
And the bigger thing was good to be back in H-Town around the organization.
What a
and
beautiful
the
day in Houston. And,
yep.
Like he was giving all these hints. And then you even had Nick Caserio respond. And then you also had D'Amico Ryans last year respond, being like, well, he's a great football player anytime he's ready. This was last year. This was last year in the second half of the season. Now you have J.J. Watt going to – they had it at Constellation Field, didn't they?
His charity
softball game. So you had him, and you saw all the soundbite came out. If he ever needs me, I'm just a call away. This is his last year, blah, 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 blah. And then D'Amico Ryans today at the golf tournament. I hope Cal didn't say anything unnecessary. We know what Cal likes to do at golf tournaments. Likes to run his mouth a little bit too much.
I'd really like to get J.J. back in the building.
But – anyways, D'Amico talked, and he was like, yeah, you know, I have his number if I ever need him. Can we stop with this silliness? Like, the fact that they went back and forth last year with, like, this innuendo and these rumors and all these hints, and now you're doing it again in the offseason, you're firing everybody. Oh, can you imagine J.J. Watt playing one tech? No, not really. He's never really done it. Could you imagine J.J. Watt, D'Amico Autry, Danelle Hunter, and Will Anderson playing on the same – not really. I can't imagine that. If D'Amico Ryans didn't call J.J. Watt the playoff race last year, when, remember, Will Anderson missed week 15 and week 16 with a high ankle sprain and then played the final two games basically at 50%, and then of course we remember John Grenard missing two games when he was nursing a grade one ankle sprain in week 17 and week 18. You also had Dylan Horton, who was away from the team. You know, we found out later it was cancer, and we wish him the best in recovery. But if he didn't call J.J. Watt in the thick of a playoff race last year, when Will Anderson missed two games, when John Grenard missed two games, they were both hobbling around as you reached the postseason, D'Amico Ryans is never calling J.J. Watt. Let's put the fan fiction to rest once and for all.
There's no room for him on the team regardless, but you're right. If it was going to happen, it already would have happened. We call it Aaron Rodgering, just like, you know, you do catfishing when some people get catfished. Well, this is Aaron Rodgering. This is when you need the attention so badly or you're wanting people to just keep hinting, keep asking, and keep coming at you for the clicks and everything else that you just can't say no and you like to stir the pot. It's annoying. Is what it is. And no one's going to put it to bed because, like you said, today they could have and they didn't. And it's like you have a lot of pass rushers on this team now. You have above average pass rushers on this team now. Yeah, I know there's always going to be a relationship. Yeah, I know it's a great thing to have JJ in the building and all that stuff. But why are we doing this? Why are we doing it now? Because it's fine and it's all good. But at the same time, there's going to be a time when the attention needs to be on the guys that you brought in, along with the guys that are getting ready for the next year of their career, that we don't need to have this conversation.
No. King of Twitch says he's a media bad word. Hey, call me if you need me. I'm right here.
Aaron Rodgers.
Just saying. A little bit. Now, they're both on McAfee.
Is Rodgers going to be back?
Is there a correlation there on McAfee? I don't know.
Yeah, see, I don't know.
I bet he would be. McAfee kind of does what he wants over there.
Well,
I mean, McAfee got the other dude fired, and he's ripping ESPN Bet on his show. McAfee does McAfee.
Well, the fact that I can't believe how much, how often, how frequent. It used to be like every now and then they'd slip in a cuss word. Now they just don't care.
I think he'll be back on the show if I had to bet.
Okay.
Like, because McAfee kind of beats to his own drum, which I appreciate about McAfee.
But I also wonder who's paying it because of the fact that ESPN's getting tight in the purse strings.
I mean, McAfee's pretty, like, he was getting like millions from FanDuel before ESPN ever came around, though.
Right, but he took a pay cut to come to ESPN.
Yeah, but I'm saying he's not hurt for money. Like, he's got bad word money. You know what I mean? Like, you get to a point where you got FU money, and you don't really care what people are telling you.
Yeah, like, they do have money to spend. They went out and bought... I mean, every time they do a promotion, they whether it's just, you know, you respond to this or that you saw this show clip and we'll send this many people cash. And then they were buying season tickets to the Fever when Caitlin Clark came on the show and giving some away and keeping some of them and doing they have money. But Aaron Rodgers, I'm sure, is commanding a pretty penny because that was such a big deal that he did his exclusives and dropped his big bombs when he was on McAfee.
It wouldn't surprise me, though, if he doesn't get paid to do a hit on that show. Like, he loves the sound of his own his own voice, and like you said, he loves the attention, and he has a buddy that does the show every now and then with McAfee, too. So, I don't know. I don't know the logistics. Yeah, I don't know the logistics there. It wouldn't shock me if he did it for free. It wouldn't shock me if he was getting paid a pretty penny a hit. Like, I have no idea. A texter just sent me one half of PP on the mornings on Highway to Hell. He sent me the video of D'Amico. I saw this earlier. D'Amico said, I need him, JJ, now. Anytime Watt's ready to go, I'm ready to go. So basically he's calling his Watt bluff. I don't know why they're hinting at this.
I don't know why they're flirting with each other.
Why are they doing this? He's never coming back. They're never getting back together again.
That's what I was referring to. I thought you had that's what you're referring to as well.
Well, I mean, I did refer to it. Yeah. The texter sent the video.
Yeah, there's no doubt after I heard the whole D'Amico comments today, like, why can't we just put it to bed? Just squash it once and for all. And even JJ saying, after this year, I'm not going to be able to do this anymore, so it's going to have to be this year. Just, again, adding more fuel to the fire. It's now or never. There's a chance. You say there's a chance. There's not. Stop doing it. You don't need him. And I don't think no matter how, even if, God forbid, you have injuries, I don't know that there's going to be a time in this entire season where you suddenly go, yep, I need JJ now.
I wouldn't hate having him on the team. Like, that's,
he says he's working out. Like,
it's a different conversation because, like, I don't think this is going to happen. Like, I think it would have happened last year if this was going to happen. But if JJ Watt wanted to come play on a league minimum, would I put him on my 53-man roster?
The key.
Yeah, absolutely I would.
See, that's the key, because when McAfee mentioned it, McAfee said for $30 million, he's got to make this many millions of dollars. If he's coming back, he ain't getting a big deal.
That was a different thing, though.
Like, this was last week.
But he wasn't talking about coming back for the Texans and demanding $30 million.
No, not demanding it. He's like, you come back, let's get this thing done now. He'll play against the Colts at least once, that's for sure. You give him $30 million. You know, make sure you take care of it.
Yeah, but Watt never said that. Like, Watt's not...
No, Watt didn't say it.
Right, but
McAfee said it.
Sure, but I don't know why that's relevant.
No,
we're talking about Watt playing on the team.
McAfee's
not demanding the salary.
Because for the minimum. If he's just coming back on the minimum deal, and if there's a need for him, fine. I just don't think that there's a need for him right now.
I'd take him on the team. I don't think there's a need for him either. And if the timing was ever going to be right, it was going to be last year. That said, if J.J. Watt wanted to come back on a veteran's minimum, let's bring it home, J.J. Watt. Come on.
I would argue there's a need for him. I think you could use a sub package into your pass rusher. I agree with you that
he's
not
luxury than necessity.
I don't think they're playing him inside.
I think they would in a pass rushing situation.
As an inside package, they've already done it. They used to do that with him and Clowney all the time.
Third and 11, he's playing inside, getting to the quarterback.
And that's kind of where I think that, because you're not going to come and ask him to play 90% of snaps.
No.
Isn't that what Danielle Hunter was brought in to do?
Danielle Hunter's your edge guy.
He's an edge rusher.
I think they'll move Danielle Hunter inside.
They might, but not really. They moved Will Anderson inside a little bit last year to get creative. But, like, D'Nico Autry is going to be an inside outside guy. He's going to be inside on
pass rush. I'm sorry, not Danielle Hunter. I meant Autry.
You meant, yeah, Danielle Hunter.
They'll move Autry inside. I think that's one of the things that is preventing them from going to getting another defensive tackle.
I don't think so.
I think they like Settle and they like Foley.
I mean, Autry's
but at the same time,
a...
on pass rushing situations, they're going to put Autry inside.
Yeah. It depends on how many linemen they have down. I think he's more of a three-tech than a one-tech, whereas Settle and Foley are more one-techs. Now, you can get creative on third and 11. You don't really need a one-tech on third and 11 because you're abandoning the running defense. You could absolutely have a spot for J.J. Watt. I mean, if this is legitimate, and I it's not, like I'm putting less than 1%, greater than 0% chance on this.
Okay, what are your odds again? Sorry.
Less than 1, greater than 0.
See, I would go higher than that. Not massively.
Why didn't it happen last year?
That's where I was going. So I would put it up around maybe 15%, and I would put it that high because to your specific point about why it didn't happen last year, I don't remember if this is a conversation of the show. Joe was, you know, the producer back then. It wasn't me, but I remember hearing this conversation and just me and my buddies having the conversation as well. Like when Watt first started doing the media stuff at the start of the season, you could tell he wasn't in football shape. He was obviously still in great shape, but he had slimmed down a little bit. He didn't look like he could step on the field right away. He'd stepped away from it fully. Didn't have, I don't think, the same bulk that he had when he was playing. And I think it probably took him some time to build back up. And I think that's probably why it didn't happen last season, is he didn't feel like he was in the shape and had the muscle mass that he had during his playing time to be able to go on and feel and do it.
Talking now muscle mass.
Now he's had an offseason to get
muscle
there.
Mass.
I think Brian's right. I think that he lost so much weight last year that he wasn't, even if they needed him, I don't think he could have done it. But the fact that I saw the press conference and I saw the video, and then he mentioned the fact that he's working out like he did when he played for one more year, you can tell he's jacked up again.
Okay.
Especially
he's jacked up based on wearing a t-shirt in front of a softball game.
sitting at the table and everything, you could notice.
You know who else was jacked? D'Amico Ryans. He needs to come back, play middle linebacker for the Texans. They need a third linebacker.
Come on. That's why I'm saying there's more than a 1% chance.
From a 12.5-sack season.
It sounds like that. It's not out of the realm of possibilities, which is why I'd say I'd put it more like a 10%. But I think that there is more than a 1% chance, simply because whether it started out kidding or not, there's a reason he's trying to stay in football shape for one more year.
Well, think of how his Texans career ended with that.
He'd love to do it.
Yeah, with that 4-12 monstrosity that the 2020 season was.
Why didn't he come back already? If he loved to
do
it.
I just told you why. I think Brian's right. Last year, I don't think he was in football shape.
Fair. Why wouldn't he have signed a deal already?
Because he's making a whole bunch of money from TV, and right now they don't need him.
Where is he making money on TV right now?
They just got rid of Phil Simms and Boomer, and they elevated him to the NFL Today prehab. So he's getting a boatload of money.
You don't think that's a per-show basis and gets paid in football season? You think he's getting paid in May from CBS in the fall?
No, but I'm saying he just signed. I'm sure his deal just got elevated. He's going to make a substantial amount of money to do TV this
year. But I don't think he's getting paid in May. If we're talking about if J.J. Watt really wants to play, why hasn't he done it yet? I don't think his contract with CBS is the reason to why. I think that's an independent contractor. He's getting paid on a per-show basis.
I don't think it's an independent contractor at all.
Do you think he's getting paid on May 6th?
I think that, no, not that he's getting paid on May 6th, but I don't think it's independent contractor
that's irrelevant,
by show
basis.
It is relevant.
No, it's not really, because if he's not getting paid in the summer, why is the contract with CBS a hang-up of not signing with an NFL team?
It's not that it's a hang-up, but if you walk away from it, it possibly could be hard to get it back. And so he's going to get whatever he's going to get, $6 to $10 million to do studio show for CBS. And you're talking about if he comes back to the Texans with the cap and everything else, what's he going to get to come back and play football again? I don't think that it's anything.
You don't think that contract's waiting for him, like it was waiting on Tom Brady. You don't think he has that written into his deal by an agent? Hey, we could step away from this and come back to it after we come out of retirement and play.
I don't think
the contract's a hang-up.
I don't think that's a clause written in the contract.
It was in Brady's.
Brady's different. Brady's walking away and saying
I think it was in Romo's too. Actually. I think it was in Romo's.
I never heard that.
Yeah, I don't think that the TV contract is a hang-up of him signing with an NFL team. And if he really wanted to do this, I think he would have already been on the roster. I think he would have been on the team. I think it's like this little temptation, slight flirtation, just like it was at the end of last year.
Couldn't you see an older player, wanted to play half a season, though?
Sure. Why did he do it last year?
You cannot believe us, but there was talk during the first part of the season that, like, man, JJ's really slimmed down.
Yeah,
like
I remember him being slim.
That's the reason. That's why he didn't do it last year. I don't think so. He needed time to build back up, and I think I'm not saying he's going to play again. I put the odds at 15%. It's not a majority, but I don't think even if he did come back, even if the 15% hits, he's not coming back to play 17 games. I think he's Roger Clemensing this and coming back in, what, late October? He's not a guy you can ask to play 90% of the snaps. He's not a guy you can ask to play 16 games. He's going to come back, ramp up for when the playoff push gets here, and then be here in the postseason.
I like that theory. That's a good theory.
That's what I said. Whether you could see it or not, that's up to you. Whatever you can see or not see, if he was bulkier in the press conferences and in a softball jersey. The fact is, you don't come out and say, I got back in football shape. I'm lifting like I was in football. I'm only doing this for one more year.
He literally said that in the second half of last year when he was working out with the Texans to McAfee.
Well, he says he didn't look it.
I think he ran out of time, though. That might have been the case. I mean, it's hard to say. Look, I either think he's telling the truth, and it's like a second half of the season playoff push type of thing, mm-hmm. or he's Aaron Rodgers, you know, media bad word again.
If he is,
it's really the two answers.
If he were to come back, and again, greater than zero, less than one, I believe your scenario. Like, in my greater than zero chance, I believe your scenario would be the way that he comes back. Doesn't do with camp, has nothing to do with all that. Maybe he does a couple of weeks on TV. He's part-time CBS. Maybe he does a couple of weeks there, then comes back in week 8. Trade deadline time, something like that. 8638R tripping. I would die a happy man to see the man who I grew up with retire to Texans jersey. I agree with that. Like, I'm saying it's not going to happen. If he were to come back and join the Texans, would I be happy? Absolutely. I would love it. I would be here for it. I hope that it does happen.
Look,
I don't think it's gonna, but I would love for it to happen.
Even the thing that we talk about when we talked about Kasera not being prepared with insurance policies in the past as it related to Kenyon Green and this team always needing depth. It's great having an ace in the hole waiting for you if you need it. With a guy that has that resume, with that amount of talent. If he says he's only going to do it for one more year and stay in football ready shape, so be it. But a lot of teams would kill to have a guy that has that resume waiting in the wings just in case.
Pessimistic Chad, let JJ and Miko have their fun. More annoying than them is you talking about it and calling it annoying. If it's BS and it is BS, why bring it up? Because it's a topic in the city right now, and it's getting a reaction
Everyone's
out of you, Pessimistic Chad. 2010, how many snaps could JJ Watt realistically play in a game? 10? 10 snaps?
I was going to say 15 to 20.
10 snaps. Now, 15, 20, probably. I think he could get up there if he was really needed and you had some injuries. But I think that in a perfect world, you're bringing J.J. Watt to play 10 snaps, pass rushing situations only.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. David, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up, David? Hello, David. Yeah, you're up.
Yeah. Hey, I'm driving, guys. Maybe you can research this for me. But I think the reason he didn't come back last year, didn't he still have a year left on the Cardinals?
No,
bill
it was done.
Would have owed some kind of compensation?
No, his contract was done, if I remember correctly, with Arizona. He had a 2-year contract whenever he signed with Arizona. Last year, or 2 years ago, was the second year with Arizona, so he was free.
Yeah, because I remember him walking off the field for the last time, and I believe he was in street clothes because he had already gotten hurt or whatever and said,
no, he played.
Did he finish the year?
Yeah, he played. Remember, that was against San Francisco, actually.
Oh, then he was Mike.
It was in San Fran.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe he announced his retirement before the season was over.
I think that's true, too.
I think he lit out his intentions. So, like, I don't remember exactly how long. But
I think it was like 4 weeks.
Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, exactly. It wasn't a full season, like, farewell tour, like a Miguel Cabrera thing, but it was before the season was over.
Pretty sure that was the Arizona Cardinals in-season hard knock, too.
I want to say he was, some way or another, he was mic'd up. Or there was.
No, he was.
Yeah,
he was mic'd up. They were the in-season hard knocks, if memory serves, that year. So, like, they had behind-the-scene moments with J.J. Watt. I think Matt Burke was the guy in the when they were watching film where he was like, hey, guys, give J.J. Watt all your love or whatever. Because Burke came over, the D.C. from the Texans,
right.
from
yep.
Arizona. They
yep.
were the – yeah, that was their hard knocks team. I think it was, like, 4 weeks left. And I think he just randomly did it one day on Twitter, I believe.
Yeah, sounds right. Yeah, it sounds right.
But he had a little bit, not really a retirement tour, but like a retirement month. But I think he could give you, 10 snaps if you were to come back. One more text on the – actually, I got kicked out. I got kicked out of the text line. Someone's in there that kicked me out. 9331, why are y'all calling Lance a casual? We weren't talking about Lance.
Nope.
It wasn't Lance, actually. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Kamari Laster, I was thinking about this weekend because we believe in a lot of things when it comes to football. Like, you need to be big. You need to be fast to play certain positions. Laster is going to be an interesting case study for a very specific reason. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Loaded, ready to rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
7557, definitely mic'd up. He told D'Amico, make Houston great again before we officially hired him, and that was kind of debated for tampering. I don't remember the tampering debate. You remember that debate?
Not the tampering part. I do remember the quote that he shook D'Amico's hand and said exactly that. Go make Houston great again.
Tampering case? I don't remember a tampering case.
I never heard that.
Should we have t-shirts that say that? Make Houston great again? It wouldn't be MAGA. Are you? Is it,
What color? Should we make it a red shirt?
It would have to be a red shirt with white lettering.
Yeah, with white lettering, yeah.
Maha.
Maga?
No.
It'd be Maha.
Maga.
Maha.
Sounds like watching the Astros. Maga. The 0702, the reason JJ hasn't signed is to save a roster spot for someone else on the team. If the Texans have a cut or injury, they'll sign him. Okay, that's believable. I think it's an interesting theory, and I think that kind of supports Brian's theory a little bit too, where, hey, it's a week 6 edition, it's a week 8 edition, it's a week 10 edition, it's later in the year, don't have to deal with camp, don't have to deal with the dog days early in the year. So that would support that theory a little bit, I think. All right, 713-780-ESPN. So I had a thought over the weekend. Kamari Lassiter, you know, we've talked about his 40 speed. We've talked about, is he an inside guy? Is he an outside guy? How much value should you be putting in these 40 times, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? I think this is going to be an interesting case study on if 40 time at a 40 time position actually matters. Because I think that the top two positions when it comes to 40 time, receiver and corner.
For sure.
I don't think you have to have a great 40 time to be a terrific running back, actually.
No.
Like Arian Foster didn't have a terrific 40. I'm pretty sure Derrick Henry's 40 wasn't fabulous.
Shiftiness, quickness,
seeing
ability
the hole,
to hit the hole.
Power, plowing through people, penetration through the offensive line. So I think the two positions that you really want a good 40 time, at least that's like the common thought when it comes to football, is wide receiver and corner. Although you look at some of these great 40 times all time, like John Ross, like the dude who ran the fastest 40 ever, did nothing.
Yeah.
Did nothing in the NFL. You've had multiple guys who are incredibly fast that do nothing in the NFL. But is there a certain baseline that you must have to play the corner spot well? This reminds me, and this is going to sound weird, this reminds me of when Jeff Luhnow thought that there was an underappreciation of small baseball players. And he started to really put a lot of inventory in small baseball players. He'll say Jose Altuve, but he didn't really have anything to do with Jose Altuve. The biggest case study here was Alex Bregman. He took Alex Bregman with a high draft pick. He felt like if Alex Bregman was your prototypical 6'2", 210-pound guy, he would have been the number one pick in the draft. And he felt that small baseball players were being devalued. I wonder if Casario's thinking along those same lines when it comes to 40 time at corner, where everybody's looking at, the stopwatch, the combine time, and Casario's looking at game speed. He's looking at the film, seeing how fast Lassiter in coverage gets from point A to point B. I'm wondering if Nick Casario thinks that there is an overrated, like we're overrating 40 times, and he feels that, not that he's slow at 4.66 or whatever he ran, but he feels like these guys who are kind of fringe fast are being underappreciated.
Well, and to take that to the next step, maybe he feels like that's a distinct advantage for them that other teams haven't figured out yet. When we talk about when analytics was really on the forefront and then all of a sudden it just kind of knocked the door down and everybody had to do it, maybe they're on the forefront of saying, because we've heard him say it, we've heard other people that were scouting the draft saying, look, the Texans had their eye on Lassiter. They liked what they saw regardless of his times, and they were hell-bent adamant about the fact that what they saw on tape did not look like a slow football player. And maybe that's something to their advantage that they've capitalized on, and maybe they did want him all along. We don't know. But it does make sense that when you just start thinking from a realistic perspective, look, guys running in tights and running in basically nothing just to run the fastest time, who's the fastest kid at recess, as opposed to do you play the games in your recess clothes or do you play the games in helmets and pads?
Yeah.
I think that there's something to that.
And look, this isn't like a take where I'm saying, oh, well, Lassiter is going to be this great football player. It might turn out that Lassiter is too slow to play outside corner. It's like, okay, well, we have our answer there. But it's something that I'm going to be watching for
sure.
Him, especially if he plays outside.
Well, but also the fact that and Casario has been very adamant about how much he believes that the most college-ready players for the NFL are SEC football players. He knows that the best two defenses the last several years in college football are Georgia and Alabama. So he's already put a lot of stock in that. But then when he says, look, I know this kid can hit. I know he's got a nose for the football. I know that he has the instinctual things that I look for in an NFL football player. If he feels like, hey, let all those draft guys and all the guys that are analyzing talent put a lot of weight and speed based on what's on a stopwatch.
Yeah.
And if I believe that I got a better football player for my system and how I evaluate talent because of where they played, how they play, and the speed that they show when they're actually in full uniform, I'll believe in that until I see differently.
And Caserio's flat out said, too, that he doesn't take anything from the combine seriously. Mm-hmm. Like, he says that the interviews are the most important things that he pulls from the combine.
That.
And, like, think about it. If you have, let's just say, like, you have these combine, you have three corners, and let's just say the last hitter of the three corners is the slowest with the 40. But what if on film he's the quickest, he's the fastest? Like, where are you putting more value in? Are you going to put value on the stopwatch 40 time, or are you going to put the value in that Lassiter is literally defending the other team's best receivers well, where the other two guys are just mediocre? Like, I rather have the guy who has a slower 40 time but is much better in coverage whenever I'm watching
technique,
him actually
instincts.
On film.
Yeah,
and
all
this,
that.
And it sounds like I'm defending Lassiter and I'm defending the pick. I'm just saying, let's watch. Let's watch. Let's
I'll see defend if, it. I liked it.
Well, if he could be a bust, you know, he could be terrible.
Yeah, and then at that point, then you will have a different point of view in terms of how they're evaluating talent and maybe what they saw that didn't pan out. But at the same time, I believe in the fact that you're looking at the best conference. It's not that's not some outlandishly crazy statement. We all know the SEC is the best football conference in the country, and you're looking at a guy that was on one of the best, if not the best, defensive unit in the country, and you saw him put up numbers, stats, and be fully capable on that defense. I don't believe that and everything else that went into them doing their deep dive on him coming into the league, I don't believe that I'm going to question that until I see differently. But I'm fine with the fact that, you know, he in the Spandex Olympics, that he didn't put, you know, one of the better times speed-wise on a stopwatch.
Yeah.
But if he does it on the field in cleats, great.
I think we overrate 40 and undervalue some fringe fast guys.
I'm with
guys.
You. I heard Caserio with the Texans radio.
How dare you?
Well, and I've already explained to you, not that I have to, but I explained to you why I was listening to them.
I didn't ask.
But at the same time, when he was talking to John and Mark, he was very clear in the fact that the biggest takeaway from all of this stuff, he didn't want to take away and obviously crap on the league for doing what they do and putting it all out there and putting it on the NFL Network and everybody with the combine. But they've already seen enough and gone through enough tape and game by game, scouted enough to know the football player about their football abilities. The interview was all that they really wanted to get to see if from a stability standpoint, from a maturity standpoint, and from a locker room standpoint with culture, does the kid fit in your locker room?
Here's the fastest 40 times ever in the combine. Top 11. Fabian Washington, corner from Nebraska. You remember who he is?
Played for the Raiders, right?
The picture of him is with the Raiders. I had never heard of him. Number 10 is Jacoby Ford, wide receiver from Clemson, ran a 4.28 40. Ever heard of him?
Buffalo?
Yeah.
I don't know where he played.
I think he
played college
at
Clemson.
I think he might have played with the Raiders and the Bills.
Shocker. Raiders love 40 times.
And I said Bills, yeah.
J.J. Nelson, wide receiver, UAB, 4.28. I remember him in the league, but I don't remember him doing anything.
Yeah, I don't remember anything.
I want to say he played for the Niners. Number 8, Jalen Myrick, corner from Minnesota, ran a 4.28. Don't remember him at all. Number 7, Tyrone Calico, a wide receiver from Middle Tennessee, ran a 4.27.
Don't remember him. Played
with the Titans. I don't remember him at all. Number 6, I didn't know Stanford was this fast. Stanford Rout, corner from U of H, go Cougs, 4.27 40. Guess where he got drafted to?
The Raiders second round pick, right?
Raiders love. Yeah, I think it was a second rounder. Love Stanford Rout. I didn't know he had that kind of juice though. I didn't know he was that fast. Number 5, Marquise Goodwin, receiver from Texas, 4.27. He went to San Fran.
Yeah, he's had a decent career as like a third, fourth wide receiver. He's stuck around.
Special team or two?
Well, kick returner. Yeah, okay. He's not. He's had a decent role player career, but nothing special.
Number 4, Jerome Mathis, 4.26, wide receiver from Hampton. He played for the Texans.
Texans, yeah.
Number three, Dre Archer, running back from Kent State, 4.26. I don't remember him.
He played Rams?
I don't remember.
No, I only remember him from Madden because his speed ratings were amazing.
Number 2 is Chris Johnson, running back East Carolina, 4.24. We remember him.
CJ2K.
Yeah, like that's the only one on this. Well, Stanford Rout had a good career. That's like the only superstar on
so
this.
So Ross
list.
Fell that far.
Number
off,
1's
huh?
John Ross, 4.22. Oh,
okay,
and he was
drafted by Baltimore.
Yeah, he did nothing.
He came out of the University of Washington. I think he was drafted by Baltimore.
No, Cincinnati. He's a top 10 pick.
Yeah, they tried to turn him into a corner.
Did they?
I think somebody just picked him up on their camp roster, too. Or he's trying to get on a roster. He's making another comeback.
Yeah, he couldn't stay healthy in Cincinnati.
They tried to make him a corner. They try to make John Ross a corner.
Not initially. They initially tried him at wide receiver.
Sure. Yeah, he just couldn't stay healthy.
Exactly. But after he failed, they flipped him to the defensive side of the ball. I think he's trying to come back as a receiver again, though. But look at that. I mean, those are your fastest guys ever. And there's Chris Johnson, really good. Goodwin, okay. Stanford route had a really good career. But other than that, eh.
And I would say, I mean, we are obviously talking about specifically the 40 time, but I think when you look at the other combine numbers, you know, for Kamari last year, specifically you look at his three-cone drill where he was the top corner in the three-cone drill, and he was the third in the 20-yard shuttle. He's got short yard or short distance quickness, which I think leans into the idea that he's probably an inside corner. He's someone that's going to stick with the slot receivers over the short distance before they're picked up downfield in the zone.
I have always said that the three-cone drill is the best way to evaluate corners. What was the second thing that you said?
The 20-yard shuttle. 20-yard shuttle.
The 20-yard shuttle? That's the second best thing to evaluate corners. I've always said that. Someone said his three-cone time is top 15 all time.
I didn't know that. I just know he was the top.
Well, Lassiter's was?
Wow.
I just know Lassiter was the number one corner. Yeah, Lassiter was the number one corner in the three-cone drill this year, and he was third among corners this year in the 20-yard shuttle.
Why?
So he's got short area quickness. He just doesn't have long speed.
Corey says Darius Hayward Bay. This was combine. Maybe he didn't run at the combine.
Darius Hayward Bay drafted by the Raiders.
Yeah. They love speed. I didn't know that.
Well, another one that played for the Raiders but never played college football but was an Olympic sprinter, Willie Gault. Played for the Bears and the Raiders. And then later, after he got out of football and he was an Olympic sprinter, that's why the Bears took him and they made him into a football player, he became a bobsledder for the Olympic team.
That's what happened to I'm blanking on the name. He played football at Cy Fair. He went to Michigan, transferred to Rice. He was the first YouTube
Sam
video.
McGuffey.
Sam McGuffey.
Yeah.
First video, YouTube
right.
sensation.
I remember Sam McGuffey.
Hurdled over a dude. Yeah, he went to Michigan for Rich Rod. Didn't work out there. Went to Rice. And he was on the winter bobsled team a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Not that there's a summer bobsled team. 713-780-ESPN. What's your question for the Killer Bees? Ask the Killer Bees whatever you want. Our mailbag Monday. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees. ESPN 97.5. ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Mail call!
It's a Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees.
You've got mail.
Ask the Blankers whatever you want. Ask the Bees whatever you want. 713-780-ESPN. First question is to Blankers. Do you think that Ime will end up a top five Rockets coach?
I do. I think Ime's a really, really good coach. Top five, I don't think is that tough of a stretch. I think Bill Fitch was okay. Del Harris was okay. I think Rudy is the top of that list, obviously.
Did you ever have a smoke with one of those guys?
I don't smoke, and I never have.
What about Fitch? You ever have a drink with him?
No, I've heard bad stories about Fitch.
Really?
Yeah. McHale used to tell me stories even with
the
Celtics.
What are you, Coach GM?
I don't know if he was GM too, but the McHale stories about Fitch.
I think Fitch might have been the guy that dropped Rodney McRae.
He made like Bird and all those guys. Like,
yeah.
They had an upstairs track at the Boston practice court, and he wasn't afraid to make those guys all go up on the track and run, like, a mile or two in their basketball shoes. And McHale said, if not for winning, they wanted to kill that man.
Man, that's rough. He looks like a squished-up Van Chancellor.
He retired out on Lake Conroe.
I just saw that he died there.
Oh, is that right? He died there,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, I just pulled up his wiki. He was born in Davenport, died in Conroe. Yeah, he looks like a squished up Van Chancellor.
Do you have a Van Chancellor impression?
I can't. I'm not good with impressions.
Joel, you got a Van Chancellor impression?
I used to do it all the time, so I could do it all the time, but I can do one.
He just looks angry, this Bill Fitch.
Let me see. Because we had Man doing television. And Joel, all I know is I know you got to know where I can get some free golf and a couple of free meals when we're in Miami. I don't want the boob clubs.
That's not bad.
That's pretty good.
It's not enough. There's not enough Cajun there.
I got to work on it.
But it's pretty good.
It's pretty good, especially if we're
off
the fly.
Off the cup,
not
it's pretty good. You just need a little
bit. When we did the Van Chancellor bobblehead commercial, yeah. I voiced it.
Oh, really?
That
was pretty good. You just need a little bit more Cajun, I feel like.
I got to practice it. I haven't done it.
No, off the cup, that was really good. 7-1, don't worry if you don't get any further. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Pena, what's your question for the Killer Bees?
Hey, what's going on, guys? So, start bench cut. Brian Dawkins, Sean Taylor, or Troy Polamalu. Thank you. Have a great day.
That's a tough one.
It is a tough one.
So Dawkins, Polamalu, and Sean Taylor.
I'll start Taylor, bench Polamalu, and cut Dawkins.
Taylor, I think I would flip flop my start, your start in bench, but I would keep the same cut. I would start Polamalu, bench Sean Taylor, and cut Dawkins.
I feel like it's disrespectful to Brian Dawkins.
He was great. They're all great.
Yeah,
it makes it tough.
I'm with Jeremy. I think if Sean Taylor doesn't pass away way too soon, Sean Taylor might have like completely rewritten how the safety. I mean, he was with speed and size and could do everything. I would start Sean Taylor. I think I would sit Brian Dawkins and cut Polamalu.
Okay. 713.
We have three very different lists.
713-780-ESPN. Ocho, would you rather have a one-minute conversation with your past self or your future self?
Future self. Definitely future self.
I'm going past self. I've reached optimal wisdom, so I have nothing to really take from my future self.
What are you
going to
take from your past?
What do
you mean?
I'm going to go into my past and tell myself what to be prepared for so I might be able to do it differently.
Yeah,
I'm reversing this question. If I can talk to my future self, I can learn what me in 20 years has learned over those 20 years and then apply it in real time.
See, I'm thinking of it. Yeah, maybe I am thinking of it the wrong way because I'm thinking past self, I can go back in time, talk to my past self, and then retrace my steps. So our logic's the same. We're just having the different answer based on the same logic.
But if you're
logic.
Talking to your past self, you can't retrace those steps because the time's already happened.
But do you become your past self?
No, you're just talking to your past self.
Okay, give me the guy in the future.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, because that guy can tell me all the bets. Like, where do I buy stock?
That's exactly
who
where
wins
it was going,
all these
Jeremy.
Championships? I would be a billionaire. I would be able to buy the Astros and save them from Jim Crane.
So I can't go. So when I go in the past, I can't.
You're
tell
not going in the past. You're just talking to your past.
Too.
Okay.
So we're all the same.
We agree.
We're all the same school of thought. Yeah, I would be a billionaire, no doubt. 7153. Will Jalen Green be a Rocket next year?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so too.
He'll start the season there.
Yeah, Brian.
Yeah, no, he'll at least start the season here for sure.
Okay. Who's y'all's favorite player in each Big Three sport all time? Non-Houston, Corey.
Oh. Okay, non-Houston.
Favorite player all-time in each sport?
That's tough on the spot.
Ken Griffey Jr. on baseball, without question.
Yeah, I think mine would be the same for
basketball,
baseball.
Michael Jordan, without question. Mm. And football, Bo Jackson was my favorite athlete of all time, and he was unbelievably fun to watch as a football player, but he didn't play that long.
Yeah.
Football is...
My football.
I hate saying this because of what he turned out to be.
OJ?
No, Brett Favre.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, mine's Michael Vick, so my guy didn't turn out much better. Mine was Michael Vick. I love Michael Vick. For basketball, I'll give you an old one and a new one. Old one, Larry Bird. New one, Steve Nash. Love Steve Nash. And then for baseball, I'll go Barry Bonds.
I know you've got a special place for Barry.
Barry was so good.
Yep. I mean, good. I'm the one that has taken heat in the past because I said he was a Hall of Famer and a five-tool player before he ever got the cream or the clear or whatever he took.
And people, I agree with that statement.
He and Clemens both would have been bona fide slam dunk Hall of Famers before they ever did any of that stuff.
I mean, he didn't ever broke a Major League Baseball rule. 8604, will this show ever be entertaining and make me laugh one single time? Well, not if Blankers is making the jokes.
Okay.
I gave it a shot. I hope I made you laugh. I hope I made you laugh. 5657, at what AAV would you feel comfortable re-signing Bregman in how many years?
We did this the other
day. Yeah, we did that last week.
We might not have been listening.
I'm just saying.
17, 18 maybe?
Ooh, well, I'm at 15 no more. And I'm probably down to 2 years. I was at 15 3 years last year.
We said 2 years.
Or last week. I'm down to 15
to 2. Yeah, I was at the Matt Chapman contract, which was 3 years at 18 per year, ended up at 54.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he gets no more than 2. And I think with every passing day, the AAV goes down. But I think it's between 15 and 20.
What is the one player that you wish would have stayed with one team his entire career?
Dream.
I don't mind Dream. Because when Dream left, he didn't have prime years left. Like, he had one mediocre year. Not even mediocre year. So I don't care that he went to Toronto. Like, I'm looking to maximize winning. So I'm going to go with, like, a young player that didn't fulfill his career here.
Oh, it's in Houston?
Well, I'm going to go with Houston. He said any team. Okay. So I'm going to go Houston. I don't care who, like, I don't care about any other team. That's a good question. I wish I had time to think about this. I would probably, I mean, they had,
Repeat I think it, a lot I'll give of my people answer while you're thinking because I was saying goodbye to.
Okay. Oh, he said, "What is the one player that you wish would have stayed with one team his entire career?" So I don't care that Jordan went to Washington. That doesn't really influence me as a Houston sports fan. Yeah, that doesn't influence me as a Houston sports fan. I don't even care that Olajuwon went to Toronto because that's not going to help you win. Like, yeah, it stinks that he, you know,
I think a lot of people still, that bothers them.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. But from my point of view, I want to maximize winning. So I want a player that you, like, traded away early or left early that you could have had for their entire career. Like, for some reason, I want to say Kenny Lofton, but I don't think that's my answer.
Locally, I might say Roy Oswalt. I mean, he was at the kind of the end of when they were relevant. And he, not that he went on to have, like, you know, eight more great seasons, but he was still pretty good for, like, what, three more seasons?
Couple of pitchers. Yeah, see, Roy O was like a little bit in the twilight of his career.
He had like three more good seasons after that.
But Randy Johnson.
I was thinking that. He didn't start
Garrett Cole.
They didn't say that. What is the one player that you wish would have stayed with one team his entire career?
Because then he would have stayed with Seattle.
You can gray area that, I guess. But if you went with where they started their career, you couldn't say him.
Right.
Curt Schilling?
Yeah, that was one that
now,
got
I don't
away.
Know if he started here, though. I think the Astros might have acquired Schilling.
I think
in a trade.
He was a minor leaguer and got traded away.
But I think they might not have drafted him. I think that they acquired him from somebody else and then traded him again. I think.
I want to say, like, Kerfeld or something, maybe?
I have no idea. Yeah, I think he's like, probably in the Harness trade. Probably in the Tobinsey trade.
Johan Santana was
Johan
an
Santana's
Astros
a
prospect.
Good one. They lost him in the Rule 5, if I remember correctly. That's a tough one, because I want a player that you didn't have in the prime of his career that would be here. Like, Kenny Lofton's a good one.
Or was there a guy that got away that turned into, like, that you know, from a basketball perspective, that flourished after they got away from the Rockets? I really can't either.
Here's another pretty good one, J.D. Martinez.
Yeah?
Like,
yeah.
J.D. Martinez during the Astros' golden era?
Wasn't that Luno that decided he didn't have it?
Yeah, which really stinks, too, is that he came back in spring training. He's like, I fixed my swing. Like, trust me, I fixed my swing. And they were like, no, you didn't. And they cut him. And then he actually fixed his swing. Kendrick or Drake?
Kendrick.
Kendrick, no doubt.
Yeah, that's a big feud, huh?
Anthony Edwards or Jokic to start a franchise today?
I mean, the new hotness, yeah. Anthony Edwards.
Ant.
Just because the NBA, for the most part, isn't a big man's game anymore either.
Fishing or hunting?
Fishing.
Fishing.
Fishing as well. What is your go-to Chinese food order?
Orange chicken.
Chicken and broccoli.
Kung Pao.
With lo mein, chicken lo mein.
That's good. You can't go wrong. Kung Pao, black pepper chicken. There's so many.
Black bean chicken is good, too.
Black bean chicken?
Black bean chicken, yep.
Is it made of beans?
There's black beans in it with more of a brown sauce.
This guy says, Vic and Bonds, what? A dog abuser and a steroid user. I'm not above the rules. All right, 713-780-ESPN. That
Randy Moss
for our mailbag
wishes he was a part of a team that was above the rules.
You want to win titles. There's been a huge defense of Alex Bregman in this city. Astros czar Michael Schwab has been defending Alex Bregman to epic proportions. Do we agree with him? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Peace, Blank. I am Branham. So, there's been a lot of defending of Alex Bregman from one Michael Schwab. Love Michael Schwab. You're probably familiar with Michael Schwab if you're part of Twitter. He is the admin of Astros Twitter, so that's why I call him the czar. He can be critical of the Astros. He's not like over the top fanboy all the time. He'll blast some Astros. He'll say some critical things about the Astros. He was very critical of Josh Hader yesterday. But there is one Astro he just refuses to say anything negative about, and it is one Alex Bregman. And I wonder why. I've started to wonder why he'll be negative to some Astros, but he won't be negative towards one Alex Bregman.
Personal relationship?
That's what my guess is. I think that's the guess that
he
I
loves
have.
The salsa?
I don't think anybody loves the salsa.
I know
honest.
You don't, but I was just kidding about that. I would bet that most guys like that are the guys in the media that try to build relationships with the players and then they have a hard time.
I wouldn't call him media. I wouldn't call him Schwab media. How is he media?
There's a different definition of media these days because of how
he's an admin on Twitter.
But his Twitter account is
I think he's more of like an aggregator, like engagement farmer, maybe okay. even influencer.
I just think that's the term can be used. Maybe it's just the actual user of the term. And I think there's a different definition of it now because of the fact that Twitter, whether you like it or not, has become part of the media. People that tweet. That's why that to get a media press credential.
He didn't have one.
And be a blogger. But I'm saying others got that have podcasts and blogs that are just glorified fans get treated like media.
There is a very gray area. Yep. I wouldn't say Michael Schwab media member, though.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a media member. I'm a creator, influencer, and social media star.
And I would
star.
Disagree with that.
Which one?
That you are a media member.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm not a media member. I'm a creator, an influencer, and a social. Maybe I am a media member, but all those other things take priority.
You're just in denial.
Here was Schwab yesterday, though. Like after the Astros lost, hater is washed. I fear, which is quite the take. The back of the bullpen ruining a game again. That's 8 blown saves for the Astros. He took a screenshot of Hader's 0-2 pitch, which I mean, almost middle. 1-9 in one run games. He lists Josh Hader, Ryan Pressly, and Brian Abreu's ERA. He says scary for the wrong reasons as he quote tweets like the Astros back into the bullpen. So like he's willing to be critical of players, but not Alex Bregman. And here were a series of tweets from Schwab over the weekend that were defending Alex Bregman. I just want to see your thoughts on this.
Okay.
First one, complaining about Alex Bregman batting at fourth is silly. I think people just love to complain to complain. If you really want to do something, go to the game and give him a standing ovation when he's at the plate like the Phillies did for Turner. I doubt you will, though. Thoughts?
Ridiculous.
Why?
Back a baseball card, and you're
it's
giving
a good one. It's a good back a baseball card for Bregman.
Yeah, and that's what
you know, the back of his baseball card.
That is exactly what he's basing all of that on, because there's no one in their right mind looking at what he hasn't been able to do this entire year that shouldn't be able to at least consider the fact that he should be moved down out of the first four spots in this lineup. Ineffective, and we can go on and on and on. For you to make that statement and not be a casual, that's bad.
But he won't look at the back of the baseball card for Hader, though. So there's some, you know, hypocrisy going on here. All right, next one from Schwab defending Alex Bregman. Alvarez has been just as bad or worse over the past 14 games, so should he bat 8th? 3 question marks. 9th? 4 question marks. You put your best players where they need to be. Even with a slump, I approve moving Bregman out of the 2 spot right now because of the first inning. But what about Yordan? 4 question marks.
Yordan's body of work for the entire year has several peaks as well as this valley. Yordan has barreled up baseballs. Yordan, again, not being a casual and watching every pitch of every game like I believe you do, you realize there is a massive difference between Alex Bregman and Yordan Alvarez for this entire season, which is why Yordan Alvarez, who was flourishing in the two-hole but was moved primarily because of the inability to succeed of Alex Bregman, has a little bit of a slump going on right now, but there's a slump as opposed to a catastrophe with Alex Bregman.
Okay. Here are the next two might be my favorite two, which I'm not sure which one I love more. It's like picking my favorite kid. The only player on the Astros with a lower K percentage than Bregman is Dubon. Bregman 13%, Dubon 7%, but Alex has been in almost double the plate appearances. Bregman's BABIP is .223, though, which is a batting average on balls in play. It's called being unlucky. He will figure it out.
An out is an out, and an out with runners in scoring position is a massive out regardless. It doesn't matter if you don't strike out, but you hit a dribbler to the pitcher or what he's done most of the year, which are weak fly balls on the infield a lot of times, especially with runners in scoring position. Who the hell cares on the out percentage as it relates to effective hitters get hits with runners in scoring position. With less than 2 outs, they get fly balls to the outfield deep enough to score runners from third base.
I don't really understand but Alex has been in almost double the plate appearances thing. Like, it's strikeout rate. Like, 13%, 7%,
that's right.
It's like, it's an average. It's not really like a volume thing, like of shooting, you know? Like, it's
right.
It's weird to me that he put that last part in almost double the plate appearances.
It's like if you were giving totals for the year and said,
yeah,
Dubon only has struck out 50 times and Bregman 48 or whatever.
The other thing is like, okay, that's great that he's only striking out 13% of the time, but what is he doing whenever he touches the baseball? Like, he's hitting weak pop-ups to the infield. You can say the same thing about Dubon. Like, Dubon has elite contact skill. Dubon never walks. Dubon has zero power. So, like, Dubon's elite touching the baseball. Everything else offensively is pretty poor.
But the difference between the two of them, too, is Dubon's success rate with runners in scoring position this year has been fantastic.
A little clutch gene in him this year, whereas Bregman has had the opposite. So, like, the K percentage, it's great that Alex Bregman can touch the baseball. His contact skill has been good. But whenever you're making contact and you're hitting weak pop-ups to second base, that doesn't really help matters. In a lot of ways, it hurts you.
You're getting into double plays.
Yeah, and then the last one was Alex Bregman's infield fly ball percentage in 2024, 15%. Alex Bregman's career infield fly ball percentage, 12%. 3% difference. He's hitting underneath the ball, but he'll get there. Confidence and repetition will get him back.
I mean,
this was my favorite one.
Come on, man.
I don't get the infield fly percentage thing.
And not only that, but we're talking about his infield fly percentages for full seasons. And right now we're only 20-some-odd games or whatever, however many games we are in. If he keeps going at this rate, God knows what that percentage is going to be. But if this is what we're basing it on, great. Guess what? You know when he doesn't hit pop-ups on the infield? He's hitting into double plays with runners in scoring position.
And besides the fact that he was hitting into too many infield pop-ups before, so the fact that it's increased, even when he was going well, it was happening too much. So the fact that it's increased, even if it's only 3%, is still bad. And quickly, like I think it was two tweets ago, or maybe it was one tweet ago, he mentioned the BABIP and Bregman as being unlucky. Go look at his Baseball Savant page.
I did that this morning.
It is ice cold blue. There is nothing unlucky about this.
Blankers, guess what? So Swabs, he's saying that Bregman's been unlucky. Mm-hmm. There is Baseball Savant that will predict what your batting average should be based on your barrel rate, you know, how much your contact rate is, blah, 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 blah. So expected batting average. They do expected wOBA, but that's kind of, you know, out on the weeds. Expected slugging. Let's have you guess his expected batting average. Again, Swabs claiming that Bregman's been unlucky. What is Bregman's expected batting average according to Baseball Savant?
235.
Lower.
217.
A little higher. 223.
Ugh.
So that's the luck. And Bregman's batting average right now is 202. So technically, Schwab is right. Schwab is right. Bregman has been unlucky by 21 percentage points to his batting average. The expected slugging, by the way, 325. That's terrible. 15th percentile. Expected wOBA, 287. Terrible. 24th percentile.
So he escaped the Cologne.
He's above the Mendoza slightly.
So he escaped the Cologne and the Mendoza.
He's over the Mendoza. He's over the Cologne pretty healthy.
His barrel rates.
Now, Abreu is who was flirting with Cologne.
Super cold.
Yeah, Abreu's under the Cologne.
Yeah, he's under.
His major league average is under the Cologne. All right, so Schwab defending Bregman. What's the story there? But he'll blast everybody else. What's the story there? And maybe you believe Schwab. Is Alex Bregman been unlucky this year? 713-780-ESPN. Also, if the Astros refuse to demote Bregman, there is one guy who should. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word from a good friend, Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure. If you don't know what it is, but you've experienced hair loss, you're thinning, you're balding, you don't think there's anything you can do about it, you need to know what the NeoGraft is, and you need to know who the best is at doing it. In my opinion, it's Doc Linville right here in Houston, Texas. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com right now. You can figure out what the process is, you can get more understanding of it, and then you can sign up for a free consultation with Doc and his staff that normally costs $150, and you can get all your questions answered. They can explain the procedure to you, and you can figure out if you're interested in trying it for yourself. I did it. Could not be happier with it. Got the results that he told me I would get, and it was phenomenal. No pain for me. You could see the follicles the very next day in the mirror, and then after that, it takes about 6 to 9 months for you to totally see all the hair getting stronger and longer and growing in. But once it's there to stay. It's going to be with you for the long haul. How do I know that? Well, one of the first things Doc told me in my consultation was that 95 to 99% of the follicles on the side of your head, which is where they're going to take them from, are going to stay and grow when they're moved because they're never going anywhere. You're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head, no matter how bald you go in other areas. So he takes that hair, which is not going anywhere, and puts it where you need it most. It's kind of like replanting sod, only replanting sod on your melon where you need it. Maybe your forehead has become an 8-head. Maybe you got a baboon's butt on the top of your head, and you constantly are trying to cover it up. Regardless of where the hair loss is, he can fix it with the NeoGraft procedure. You get the consultation about the procedure for absolutely free. costs everybody else $150. You go to 975hair.com and do it. You get it for free because you listen to us. He'll take care of all the details with his staff. They'll tell you exactly how it works. No signing on the dotted line. No money out of pocket. No commitment. Just questions and answers and explanations to see if you might be interested. Check it out today. Go to 975hair.com. Tell him I sent you by because I think he is the best in the business and the procedure's a game changer. It's the NeoGraft at Doc Linville.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5 brought to you by Zada Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
Timed League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.